that is the principle. You may remember from last week, the principle was meeting a man called Paul, whose son, among others, had been throwing billiard balls at teachers' cars and doing damage, and she wants compensation. So, dear principle, a little afterthought. When you are tackling force, please remember that he is reputed to carry a knife, indeed a set of knives hidden on his person. He's like a walking set of cutlery. He makes no secret about it. Well, he could hardly. You can hear a kind of slithery jingle whenever he knows. He does this deliberately, I think, to give people a signal to keep at bay, to be warned, principal. You've had enough trauma recently, and let's face it, there's no point of putting yourself in a position where you yourself might have to claim compensation from Forbes. Indeed, the claim may have to come posthumously from your nearest of kin. Or you might have to opt, like one of our former teachers of the JET program, teaching English as a foreign language in Japan. Come to think of it, I might consider that myself, since I have been teaching English as a foreign language in this class every year. Anyway, must sign off now, as it has started to rain, and water is spraying generously in through the crack in the window of the classroom. Two pupils have stood up and are dancing around like men in a desert who have suddenly come upon a spring. I only wish they would show such imagination in their English compositions. Right then, I'm moving in to sort them out. Au revoir. Must do our bit for Francais in Europe. Nay, P.S. Remember to do what all wig wearers do. Keep your hat on. Dear principal, it's now 2:45 p.m. I'm here in class 1W, room 4, top corridor. More specifically, I'm at the back of the room, standing on top of one of the pupils' desks, writing this letter to you. You may wonder why I am in this unusual position, so let me relieve you from any agony of speculation into which you may have lapsed. There is, in this classroom, now as I write, a particular animal with which all my associations in the past have been less than happy. It is not an especially dangerous animal, nor could it fairly be called a larger, obtrusive animal, but it is one that carries its own special aura, as it were. I also must admit that this animal is not even visible at the moment, and a casual visitor to the class might be inclined to feel that in point of fact there was no animal in the class, unless, of course, the said visitor took exception to some of the pupils, which is a matter that I don't wish to go into at this point. But some people might even regard this discreet creature as, on the whole, homely and totally inoffensive. But I cannot claim to share this feeling. The intruder that I am referring to, dear principal, is a mouse. It is quite difficult to write calmly about this, even at this altitude and in this position, but it is the only way I feel I can get my thoughts coherently down on paper in your career. I know how much my letter is meant to you and wish to continue the correspondence no matter what. And let me say, dear principal, that if correspondences could be kept up from the front during both First and Second World Wars, I see no reason why I should let anything that happens in this school, no matter how hostile, interfere with ours. Or should I say mine, since you haven't replied since you met war. Oh dear, I hope nothing unfortunate has happened to you. I hope you took my warning about the knife seriously, because that Forbes character has a reputation. His nickname is the Butcher, and his house is called the Carver. So, come to think of it, if he did make a lunge for you and managed to part you from a bit of your flesh, it'd be no harm, really. You are quite overweight. Anyway, no, despite the presence of the mouse, I intend to soldier on and keep the tone of my letters as calm and rational as possible to avoid anything that might smack of hysteria or anything like that. I'm feeling to be a bit dizzy now. It must be the altitude. Must sign off. Keep the home fires burning, principal. Your resilient teacher, Ed. Hello.
Next up, could we have Wet Water?
I'm going to read a couple of things by other people, actually, about New York City. This first one is by a friend of a friend of mine. And I guess I'll just say that every so often I just collect bits of things from other people that mean something to me, and I hold on to them. So, a couple of these collections. This one is by a guy called Joshua Beckman. Bruised and seeking perfection, there are hundreds of us on every corner. Ample, discordant, upsetting. In lieu of romance, lust. In lieu of passion, passion atomic. In lieu of time, continuous and trajectory apparent, a whistling astronomy of things to do forever. I came here to kick ass and take names. What are the rest of you here for? I mean, I came here for all of you, among whom love's odds increase. What are you all here for? In lieu of the body's heroic burning and plenty, is it the weakness of flame? Did you notice how we're all doing pretty poorly? I said half deadpan, half realistic. Embrace me, New York, your many, your tiny magic. Embrace me. And she did, naked and perverse. And after knowing me for minutes, she was distant, and in my arms exposed, and not by any means the first. New York says, do not regret, continue. It says, prosper, mighty anecdotal life. I am unhappy with everything. I do without you, ashamed, all over again, thinking how I was with you. Us in a wooded Massachusetts fall, and the pulse of this place, recognizable in my actions. And this one is by a good friend of mine. I guess I won't say too much about him, but this one is about the Merritt Parkway, which is a road in Connecticut, kind of leading from New York into Connecticut, which his name is Greg, which Greg described as one of Connecticut's finest highways and byways. The snow melts off of the trees like wax. We ride by fast as others pass and watch the trees grow gray in the falling evening mist. Our windshield is soiled by the other tires that throw up dirt and dust that we cannot wipe away, as our source of water, our source of soap is gone. So we try the wipers alone, and it gets even worse. Golden, silver, hot, red light lines shoot through our eyes and cause the car to vary the lanes, passing oftentimes over the cadence line. But up in the distance is a mobile station. Gas and fluid for the windshield should perform much cleaner now, and it does. And we're off on the road to pick up my sister. Windshield fine and 3/4 of the gas tank full. We motor south to find her playing nurses with her friends. The friend's mother is smashing, and I feel very small, and embarrassed even, trying to look into her eyes. So I leave the house with my mother still chatting, and reach for my Marlboro box to light a smoke, still thinking of Kathleen's beauty.
We have Jennifer Matthews.
I swore I never do this, come up and rifle through a huge book while everyone's just like, but I'm doing it.
We forgive you.
Would you? Thanks very much. I've always found the story from the Old Testament of Isaac being sacrificed by his father particularly terrifying. So I really It's called, Where's the Lamb, Father? Where's the Lamb, Father? The Lamb is further on. Unless I carry my fire to him, the Lamb will be in time, son. Will he arrive obediently for his slaughter? You are only the backup lamb. Is the Lord a great provider? You are lamb enough. But how hungry is the Lord, Father? You are better than lamb. Are my chops more stuffing to the Lord? You are more loved than lamb. Has the Lord a taste for my soul? You are better off than them. Does the lamb have no will to please the Lord? You are a better offer than the lamb. Who will make the offer, Father? That's not beautiful. We'll go ahead and type up now. I have this particular thing where when people aren't doing things the way that I want them to be, like if it's droppy, but I try to rein them in, and then I just look in the dog. And one of my things is people taking pictures in museums or being in a big, beautiful place, and they take a picture, and then they walk away, and they don't actually be there. But then I'm not there because I'm sitting there fuming about them not being there. So. In the Louvre, teenagers create documents instead of art, listing their camera phones to get a picture of an old celebrity, briefly, before turning to each other, kissing, jousting, swearing, taking up space adults cue and pay for. Certain I know more about how to be near art, I elbow these loud little lives to get to the front of where they are. I fold my arms to demonstrate how silence works. The Mona Lisa smirks. None of us take any notice.
Jim, I think we're just about to hit Master Escobar in the next couple of minutes, so if you want to get on that mic. Next up, could we have Stefan the Red on? Stephen.
Is from paper bag on?
Yes. Very short and hyperbolic. The long gloved hands, the swastika or Fianna Fáil armband. Bank rolls, banks and steamrolled Tara. GM your potato and euthanize your mama. Vote once more and make a yes of your no. Mortgage your soul for a hovel and coal. Ah, my Ireland, my Ireland, my Ireland, my home. For Ireland is a referendum away from 1984.
Thank you, Stefan. Next up in history, Buffy.
Coffee swirls its brown skin. Internal organs of life weigh on its surface like a chandelier. It takes full body and vigor, barely contained in its skeleton white cup. This is called The Scientist. I think it's kind of a short story. Knowing that her love was a difficult choice, Sophia scanned her eyes across the crowd of damned souls with nobody else to set her heart upon. To her dismay, however, she found that they were all wood paneling, whereas he was the ever-changing sky. So she turned down for a let's get dinner and get straight to the main course proposition and set her sights on becoming a scientist. She studied her chosen subject with the conscientiousness of love. At first it was meteorology books and instruments that visited in a table. With care, she lobbed each roll of lightning to flash across his fur of dial and made a note of every clap of thunder to crash earth sounds from his mouth. But she found that his colours changed from minute to minute with little time for documentation, and she was up and down each day like a fiery sun. Sometimes she could make out images in his clouds, but they scurried away so quickly from his draining eyes analysis that she decided to opt for a new science. Yes, she would make herself a geologist. map out her substance with labor. And so she realized she didn't know the names of all the elements that Gosh would have made. And so she made herself a chemist. But still his atoms were impossible to condemn. Next she donned a divining rod and poked some products to find the still waters running deep, but found some resistance to her scientific inquiries. Perhaps pharmacology was the answer. But all her efforts were found to be feeble. Nutrition is important. She'd become a master chef. Swirling her love through his mixture like vanilla essence, she served him from her body, steaming liver with artichoke hearts and bleached whey matter. After he had taken a still though, he returned to being a stranger, so she turned her attention to the new science. Laying down her ladle, she sought to try his green hands at bottom, unaware that he'd already wrapped around her like an ivy, blocking out the window of her objectivity. Fingers torn and nettled, she laid him out on the psychoanalyst chair and asked him to tell her of his dreams. But he was as shy as when a child once came to one she played part in, and his mind had been set into the words that could describe the strange colours he'd seen himself wash over him in that other land. Next, she studied linguistics, analysing his every word and taking down their context. But by the time she was through, they were written in a yellowing book. Whole centuries had passed with their growth and introspection, and she was none the wiser. This went on for quite some time, until one day her love, infuriated at her bludgeoning blood test, and tired of only seeing her face in the map book, shook her by the shoulders and said, "What is it that you want of me, Sophia? What is it that you want?" Startled, she looked him in the eyes for the first time in a long time and said, "I want to know who you are." He took her in his arms then, pressing her to him tightly, uttered not a word. And as his fist opened like a bloom, fingers closing like petals around her own, it was then that she knew who he was. He was his arms around her, the heat from his body, the cornfield stubble cheek against her face, a sigh of warm breath, his fingers as a wave dancing and rippling over her neck, and he was the iambic pentameter of his heartbeat pounding against the sea cave of her chest. As she dropped to the floor, the letters after and before her name, like the last hope she was stepping out of, she knew that she had found out who he was, and that she had found Sophia. She held him closer.
Next up to the open mic, we have Dora Harding.
Previously, please, still racing twice the win. And I said to him for people like John Kelly and Stephen Law. Anyway, this thing's got to find him. Flying wheels. You were too like a rim caught from a hole that I threw and that remained faithful. The nipples standing proudly held a steely nerve to be spoken through the hole like they were blue. Then the wheat turned, and like a windmill, it knew no master. But the wind, which blew cold, and set ice to stone, ice through cold wind, its cargo or bastard. There was a good friend of mine died a couple of days ago. his name was or his name is Robert O'Donoghue. We know him as the ROD. His son, Greg O'Donoghue, died a couple of years ago. And he was a truly great literary journalist. And when Seamus Murphy died about 40 years ago, he wrote his poem. And he had forgotten about it, and I produced it from a couple of weeks ago, and he got a great for all that. It's called Requiem for a Sculptor, about James Murphy. Close the eye on the dance of the birds in the hazelwood. Storyteller, rest your tongue. This night, to be revenge for godness and sting you in the fair too. Such lies have your images, all things wild and gay must still persist. So see I, at last on the economic storm. Go down, where no light to see, and down where no heart breathes. Go down and close the vaults of clay, and down beyond stones that play their tricks. Go down, talker and maker, go down, and down the chisel and the stone mad eye, down the hammer and the heart, where the images from the imager depart. The mad stone harmonized speaks for him. Images recall the imager, among them a goddess of sea, virgins, madonnas, some figures of the public dead carved for bread. So a spirit breathes into stone the light fat of Promethean bone. Thus images retain the heart, through the beloved imager depart, through the beloved imager depart. Thank you.
Do you know who Grobman was? Stengover. Okay. And that comes from Govnia, the old Celtic metal worker that lived from the Puritan run. All of Irish land that before. Is that what we have, Mr. Nick Berry?
Father, the chapter. Wake up, it's time for the chapter. Here every morning to make you feel good about your life. Waiting it away, for a box for an hour every day. They're coming with their morals, their theories, their pride and their anger, to get their verbal kicks from flailing draws. They're coming from satellite towns where no one's moving and no one gets out with their dignity intact. The chapter makes you feel, makes you feel good about your life. Take the edge off those difficult days. Makes you feel good about the life you've made, the kid you've raised. Wake up, it's time for the chapter. When I was a little boy, I thought I'd be a diver, a foreign correspondent or an energy driver. First man is a phase, star of Silver Spring, famous astrophysicist or movie queen. Let's talk about crams and washing machines. Let's talk about the end of childhood dreams. Let's talk about clean streets and cocktail bars, fitted carpets, family cars, colour TV, double glazing, rubbish cleaning, washing machine, it's amazing. Let's talk about crams and washing machines. Let's talk about the end of childhood dreams. Let's talk about going to the laundromat, hopping on the bus, picking up 50p, it's not a fuss. Putting in the conditioner, getting it clean, sitting quietly, reading those women's magazines. Let's talk about crams and washing machines. Let's talk about crams and the end of childhood dreams. Let's talk about dinner and watch what you like for tea. What you want in bingo, let's show it to me. Go and get your picture taken, having it for free. Tell us how it feels every week. Let's talk about crams and washing machines. Let's talk about the end of childhood dreams. The other week I read an article and in the newspaper, and it's basically the fact is the quote from the article, or it's my own, called 338. This week, 5 teenagers remain missing. Children 38 non-nationals have gone missing in the past 3 years. It is believed that many of those who have been forced into the sex industry. What is so disturbing is the lack of response to the public outcry we faced if they were Irish. After the appearance of the dogs in the midst of colour and race, they were sent here to be safe, 338. That's all few people are pointing out how shameful this is. Speaks volumes about our attitude towards child protection. It is a privilege to be extended to a small few, and your first line is the colour of your skin can exclude you. They are sent here to be safe, 338.
Okay. Next up, who happens to agree in my case.
This one's called Yada. To the hostage who follows conviction that mirrors those from which he has met. An inward left her igloo on the night when you were born, dark unwritten dreams subdued to a skin. Your mother words were smothered by a foreign empire's tongue before you were uprooted from your early flower seeds, to be then unlocked and savaged by a brownish fake speech as harsh and craggy foreign as the cliffs of your new place. That place where you were weathered by fierce Atlantic storms and tossed about and tried through tedious years of bending to self-important ways not found in your own home. Was your exile sprung, like mine was from my forebears, from your father's mind or new found kind? Did you reject the climate of the weather of the blind? When you went back to where your mother sourced her tone, on a map still much more open in its sweep from winter snows to golden fields, phlegmatic fields through seasons roaring, like the thoughts that made our nation. I think most of all you went to the final season. Silk sheets would be superfluous, embroidered cloth instead. Red roses may be redundant, silver wounds and chunks. Soft mist might shyly soothe your being, white clouds correct your form. Winds of purest breath yet known should let gently blow the warm. On sheer wings of dragonfly, borne by silver streams, you will rustle in the robes of God that swish like heaven's plumes. Let cloistered church of songbirds, white leaps of newborn lambs, chords from choirs on snowy heights from a major deep dream. Your satin shoes need scarcely move, though your arms might lightly reach, you ever let me start back low to take this part of the world.
There would be time to do one of those.
In her ruin is there in air here house, Banya Halat called Tune and Sullus Away. Buddha, Eget Gendro, Fali, Nehiha, Gongyalta, Eget Griot, Sistinus, Orient. Humar, Ruch, Ruch, Hoi, Bahama, Abi Mahu. Hasra, Nikhaila, Trigoya, the Scholar, Son, the Sermon. The Fagdienta, Tarakuna, Skunta, the Stoppet, Erish, Shir, Kisong, the light of Imar here. Your hope has been added to a sweet and long, a count cheer on our own winner, the sound of that, the eager heart of cool pain.
Next up, we have Noreen Troy.
Ireland, 100,000 welcomes. North, south, east and west, from God mapped out Ireland, he gave us the best. He raised up his arms and held out his head to surround us with water and gold-coloured sand. What was Adam and Eve, that's how we were conceived. Beneath the tall standing tree, in the sway of the breeze. Into battle the war has begun, that killed our fathers and stole our sons. With life-throwing bombs and tanks and guns, we had to survive without our loved ones. The famine, the pain from hunger and strain, I remember it all, said the woman in the black skull. With the launch of the Titanic in 1911, all those who have died, rest peacefully in heaven. The production of Playboy of the Wordsworth and Words in 1907, sometimes cause you doubt if miracles happen. He extended his poem collection in 1913. There's nothing like our own red blood can make our life grow true. Our love comes out in culture and sets our search for it. We came to Easter Rising in 1916. The leader from this army force was Owen McNeill. Titled Chief of Staff, a professor of history, the real secret team, the IRB men history. From rags to riches, we're all still the same. We're living, we're giving, and striving for faith. We're Irish, you see, and so proud to reach. We've come a long way, and we're here to stay.
Thank you, Noreen. Next up we have Mr. Greenberry.
Two short of the counted one. First one, to a grandfather. When I looked through the large photograph of you, the one that only seemed to sit proudly when such questions were asked that at will would introduce warm euphoric claims, the one that hangs today in your daughter-in-law's house, your Mona Lisa mouth holding, hiding the unspoken that I am still searching for. I never knew you. You left us a mere few weeks after my arrival, tired, I would think, of the bitterness and bickering, of the competitiveness, of the unspoken that was lost in the production line, of tiring conversations that refused to hold you, Jimmy Barry. This December, your silence will introduce itself through the Christmas cards that will not arrive, through the loose tongues that will willingly clatter away in confluence. And you, you will look down and be a witness once again as they broadcast to the new generation of the unaccepting, slightly tilting their heads in shame, Vermont.
It's a new poem called When the Dams Met.
That late November gift, arriving wrapped in 14 degrees and pouring from its low-set sun, introducing the remaining dry-hard stagnant leaves, left clinging like summer's seaside children to moments of grace, and broadcasting the quakes, whistles, tweets and flutters from the low, freshly cut hedgerows, whose donor's identification I make repeated promises to learn. I acknowledge you on our lane. That very day, when my own torment raised me late, driving me from the shoulders down to clear the fear that was fighting at my overflowing dam. And as I walked, I let the fragments fall between the loose chippings of my life, rolling the grains of my past. You spoke first of depression and medication, of loneliness, gradually raising your head higher as the judges were made redundant, eventually smiling before parting with a handshake as solid and honest as your words. I wanted to tell you that I was kept sane by loving mantras that arrived daily without a timetable or a departure date, always on time. But you didn't need to hear my story. Ramin Lagos.
Thank you, James. And next up, could we welcome next week's guest host, Anna Tippett.
Thanks for that, Gene. This actually is a long narrative poem. I know I have 4 minutes, so I won't. I actually wrote it as a lecture just to piss people off, so I hope it doesn't piss people off. It's about the connection of Ireland and Scotland.
Don't rush it.
Okay, so I stop whenever.
No,
it's nice. No, don't be honest. Okay, so the history of Scotland and Ireland. When does the story start? Who really knows? 9,000 years ago was doomed, we may suppose.
but give or take 1,000 here or there, 7,000 in 3 BC or some such year, some blokes with unknown speech and tongue, in corporal's cake with mud and crap and dung, crossed west some water which no one yet had named, and to more boring virgin lands they came, sans history, sans past, sans anything that can be construed as identity, and all that baggage which we now renew. Each year as St. Patrick lifts the course, or Billy rides upon his whitened horse. In those times no one really gave a damn, for all that only mattered was, who could man a boat or plough, or fought to save his tribe, or carved out other reasons to survive. Millennia on, when fortune had much improved, and names and things began to stick, like glue, what else, some others with labels like, let's say, Scots, went back across the water, got a toehold, first in Galloway, Argyle, round about the Mull of Kintyre, where mystery rose in from sea, or where they conspired to set up a kingdom, Dalriada, which now is attached to housing estates in Dublin's most salubrious part, but not quite as fancy yet as Tudor Court or Windsor Lawns, and definitely not Jacobin Lane or Jacobite Downing. Irony insists that they were just returning home, but those before them watching on the shore with painted bodies, whom history now calls Picts, had reason to be suspicious of warriors bearing gifts of smiles and blandor, and some new fashioned faith about a god who died and rose, and whom now they hate. Colonists tend to bring high god talk on their sea, which blur distinctions between invader and invadee. Thus these Picts or natives, call them what you like, succumbed to market forces, to axe, to swords, to Christ, and like their painted bodies scoured with Scottish rain, left history stage to topple violent, that is, cultured men. These were our guys, in this our only expansionist phase, just as skilled, no doubt, in the ways of death and how to raise a hamlet here, a homestead there, in rape and pillage and cutting throats, you know the stuff, the common coinage of armies on the march and the baggage in their train, doxies, farmers, chancers, sayers of sooth, and even saints. Colin Tiller was not, of course, your average saint at all, son of the king, or whatever pastor that in northwest Donegal. More likely a fat cowherd with some marked despair, who wished the church education on his son and heir, never dreaming that the call, "Thy kingdom come," would mean that his own kingdom came undone. But his own son, the Dove of Derry, didn't have to think of Christ and Caesar, all is interlinked, because on this earth there is no more powerful brew than that which politics and religion together do construe. So went to Scotland with his 12 disciples, they set forth and settled in Iona. It became monastery and court, and centre for propagation and for spreading wide, Ireland's one and only colony beyond the tide. We gave them our language, Irish, later Scottish, sometimes Erse, and fashioned it of their own desires, for better or for worse. They call it Gaelic now, a neutral term which serves to fake its origins or its embarrassing past to obliterate, by calling French, Francais, or German Dutch, or Spanish Pitcairnol, or some such transmogrification of historic truth, the ignorant and obfuscating just to boot. We named our country from one of our own gods, Scotia, and named our landscape southeast and northwest all over. As a tourist glance at a tourist map must show, topography will always live in the afterglow of the naming namers, those whom the gods create, a world from nothing, and inscribe upon it their eyes, their fate, their wonder, their joy, at this, their world being young, the first note humming for all their songs being sung. Ni hausse nam de pechile, we can set it out in lines, the harmonies intermingling through the rings of time. Ben Nevis, Ben Eder, Ben Darragh, Ben Gulliban, Loch Ness, with or without a monster, Killarney, Kilmarnock, Longkesh, Loch Ney, Loch Lomond, Loch Conn, Loch Rannoch, Loch Set, Glen Fiddich, Glen Rover, Glen Gregor, Glen Dowen, Glen Esk, Dundonald, Dunfermline, Dundalk, Dundee, Ben There, Dundat, Dunblane, Dunlanmay, Dunedin, Dungarvan, Mount Rath, Montrose, Montmellick, Greenock, Greencastle, Yarn Isles, Arran off the coast of Ayr and Burtonport, the Isle of Skye, the Isle of Inchfree, North Sea Isle and Kinsale Gas, Kintyre, Kinsale, Kingussie, Kincotra, West of Ross, Ross Trevor, Ross Inver, Ross Carberry, and Onomastics too, McNeil, McCarthy, MacLeod, McGork, McPhee, McHugh, MacDonald, MacDonald, Daniels, Donaldson, O'Donnell, Tambury, Cameron, Camden, Callum, Cameron, Campbell. The point does not need labouring that our cultures intersect on the ship of history from topmost rigging to the lowest deck. And if the cruel hand of whom we wish to blame did not intervene, the shape, the cut, the thrust, the map, the entire, as we now say, scene, would be entirely different, but that's the way it goes. You win some and you lose some in a magic history show. There was, of course, Duns Scotus. You recall our £5 note. The Irish philosopher looking miserable under his hairy cloak against the German winter, or maybe he had a hint that his students were going to kill him for the crime of making them sink. And then a further example, the case of one Macbeth, that Scottish king who in Shakespeare's play was put to death by this guy Malcolm, son of a previous king, one Duncan I, who was painted as a goody, but if the truth be known, was a fairly nasty piece of work, who was not averse to spiking babies in their cradles, or maybe, what was worse, poisoning in time-honored medieval fashion those who might be rivals, opponents, pretenders, or who chose to open their big mouths. Typical totalitarian stuff. But this in itself was never quite enough to make historians back off in their normal rush to judge, or more importantly, world-famous dramatists to fudge the difference between the truth of a person's reputation and what was then expedient in a given situation. Certainly easier to lick King James's butt than biographical lies to resoundingly refute. It was said that Shakespeare always loved the Lord. True or not, he could entirely not afford to buck the toadies around King James's arse like dingleberries dancing in a farce. For Shakespeare was, no more than others, a great revisionist, rewriting stories, reshaping facts, as any dramatist will do for the sake of story or theatrical impact. And in that case, who cares for those things called facts? The truth is, Macbeth is not at all as he appears. He reigned quite peacefully for more than 17 years, and when he was truly murdered in AD 1057, he left a country which had been at peace for a generation plus, which is more than we can say for others, those Irish-Scottish kings who had their day, and from whom he sprung in a direct line of descent, kings of Dalriada and Maruil, the brightest in the firmament. For those of us who are Republicans don't give a fuck, we prefer to see all kings' heads on the block. And when I say Republican, I crave the literal sense. I mean intelligent, those who know what it means. Not the dense, tabloid drugs, Murdoch Moreau, moron, TV zonks, fools, who wouldn't know what to cop on from a rule. Wisdom for us is 10,000 Diana jokes, and happiness each time a prince or sultan croaks. And goes on a lot longer than that, but I mean,
we were not happy to hear tonight, and we're all at the Fiesta, the little poetry festival of Cherry, which happens every year. One of the best festivals, I think, the fantastic bilingual festival.
Sure.
Isn't that fantastic? And Paul Duke is down to very nice small guy. And I took a poem up there to read for him. Realized that I had to read it because I'm a senior in a church. The day after the night before, which was kind of, you know, I won't go into it, actually. There's a review on the website, you can take a look at it. And I didn't say the problem, because I thought I'd defend the Monsignor, and then Louis knows later, since I've been defending the Monsignor for years. I didn't know he was coming tonight, but I would have brought this home. And it's probably a test of my memory, now, because I remember now that I actually learned it all, you know. I don't have it, but so you can throw me out the window if I forget the words. But this poem's for Louis, and it's called Imagining What Jesus Would Think. I realized I had a dual relationship with an image of him. I had feared and doubted him. I loved and adored him. I imagined how we'd meet.
How different would he be to his unaging persona? What would his reaction be to his impact since he left the world? Kevin has better things to do than worry about a paranoid little planet. Jesus is going to be fed up with us this time around. Crunch our Jesus. And what do you think about how to, first question that comes to mind, how to heal psychosis, fix the human condition, deepen in the vibrancy of stagnation. My own cousin arranged for me to help him. It's lose, she said. Lose mighty, I replied. He could jump right out of mist and I'd be him. His offer of light, an opiate, unseen until I realized I've been seduced by raw power. Give me rather Armageddon here, where I can shelter his copper eyes from the sharp future and bathe his tongue in honeyed flares.
I remember this.